Earlier today, I spoke with Lydia Wolanski in Yeremche, Ukraine. Lydia, of course, has been a frequent visitor here on Nash Holos, Ukrainian Roots Radio. Lydia, the crash of the Malaysian Airlines civilian aircraft a few days ago in eastern Ukraine has really intensified the conflict in Ukraine, has put Ukraine back again front and center on the world stage. And I detected a mood shift within the people of Ukraine, more of a sense of urgency, impatience, frustration with the West. Is that a correct assessment, or is that an accurate observation?
I'm not sure about the mood shift in Ukraine. There's very definitely a very big game changer, I think, around the world, and especially in terms of the European Union and the U.S. and Canada, and Australia, because there were some Australian passengers. So a lot of people who were kind of sitting on the fence regarding what's going on in Ukraine have definitely made it very clear that they are not happy with Putin, that this is going to lead to further sanctions if he doesn't start doing something immediately to get rid of the situation in eastern Ukraine that is largely his doing.
So this morning I had seen a post on Facebook, which, you know, I know we should be cautious about what we believe, what we see on Facebook, but the Dutch president made a statement indicating that he was hoping that this was an accident, that Russia was not really involved. And there was a fair bit of backlash, I thought, to that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if he was saying he's hoping Russia was not involved, that does come across as a rather naive statement at this point in time, since there's been ample evidence for months now that not only is this group of militants or terrorists, depending on how you prefer to refer to them, being led by actual Russian citizens, including a Russian GRU officer who is Igor Girkin, whose nom de guerre is Strelkov, meaning like Strelets in Ukrainian. He's a Russian officer and he's a GRU guy, which is sort of like being in the Secret Service in another country. And one of the other guys, Alexander Borodai, is a Moscow businessman who was involved in turning Transnistria into a unacknowledged, you know, smuggling-based statelet out of part of Moldova. So these are people who have been working on behalf of Russia to create, to stir up conflicts in other parts of Russia's former sphere of influence, as they like to call it back then. So it's very obvious that these people are part of a very deliberate movement on the part of Russia to destabilize Ukraine and possibly take away territory, but I'm sure they'd be just as happy simply to destabilize it so that Ukraine can't move in any direction itself. So for the Dutch president to make a statement like that, I hope Russia wasn't involved. It's sort of like wishful thinking. It sounds really bizarre. It's obvious that Russia is arming these people, and back at the end of June, they were bragging in social networks about the fact that they had a Buk surface-to-air missile system. And the Buk surface-to-air missile system is not a child's game. It's not a man pad. It's not a grad. It's a very serious complex of six vehicles. It's not even just six parts. It's six vehicles, and it requires a substantial crew to run, and it has six missiles on it. And they're able to shoot it as high as 39,000 feet. So this is a pretty serious bit of weaponry. Ukraine's Air Force planes don't fly at that kind of altitude. So the only purpose of having something that powerful in Ukraine, shipping something like that into Ukraine, would be to hit something that's flying way above where Ukrainian Air Force planes were actually flying all this time. I think the highest one was flying about 6,500 meters, which is about 20,000 feet. So that's a substantial difference between 20,000 feet and 35,000 feet.
Are you saying that there was a deliberate attempt to shoot down a civilian aircraft?
Well, the dark corridors of Mr. Putin's mind are rather hard to understand. If you have a sense of what his game plan is for Ukraine, then there is a lot of sense to having somebody come in with a crew, with this very, very fancy piece of equipment, shoot down a plane, scoot out of Ukraine with the equipment and the crew, and blame it on these so-called separatists. Because of the fact that the world keeps talking about them for the most part as separatists, it implies that they are Ukrainians who want to separate from Ukraine.
Right.
Otherwise, what are they doing in Ukraine? But they're not. This is a Russian initiated, Russian led, Russian financed, Russian organized movement. These people who are running around Ukraine and eastern Ukraine, taking over towns, stealing stuff, abducting people, torturing them, murdering them, these are not Ukrainians. These are not people on the ground in Ukraine. There are a lot of people in eastern Ukraine that, yeah, they don't like Ukraine, they don't want to call themselves Ukrainian, et cetera, but you don't see them lining up in recruitment offices to join these men's forces. They're not joining Ihor Girkin or Borodai or any of those other people who are actually running the show with arms in eastern Ukraine. They just sit and they crouch, but they're hiding in their houses because they're afraid. So it's a false name for something that actually doesn't exist in eastern Ukraine. It sets up a situation which Putin has already made clear on a couple of occasions, where he says, well, Ukraine obviously can't control its separatists. Well, they're not Ukraine separatists, so obviously Ukraine can't control them. They're Russia's separatists. They are people imported from Russia, including a whole bunch of mercenaries who came from a very well-known battalion called Vostok that's full of Chechens. It's nothing to do with Ukraine whatsoever. And also these so-called Cossacks that were also down in Crimea. These are also ultra-nationalist Russian mercenaries. They are not Ukrainians. They're not people from Donetsk. They're not people from Luhansk. They're not people from anywhere within Ukraine for the most part. They're mercenaries. They're basic mercenaries who have been paid and hired to come here and do this. And when you realize that's what's going on, it really changes the picture. These are not people that Ukraine should have control over. These are people that Russia should have control over. But by calling them separatists, Putin can wash his hands mm-hmm. of the situation, sort of like Pontius Pilate and Jesus, mm-hmm. and say, well, why don't we let the rabble choose between Jesus and Barabbas?
Yeah.
A bunch of drunkards in the middle of the night decide to choose the criminal instead of Jesus because they really don't give a darn.
Yeah.
It's the same idea. By calling them separatists, he can basically, you know, kind of pass the buck to Ukraine and say, these are your separatists. How come you can't control them? Maybe we should send in a peacekeeping mission. Because he said that several times, and that is his game plan.
Yeah.
So if it looks like these separatists stupidly, accidentally shot down a civilian plane, that creates a situation where Ukraine looks like it's out of control. Unfortunately, I don't think he counted on the kind of reaction that there would be around the world for this. Because for him, I think shooting down a civilian plane is nothing. He's done that before. He didn't really give a shit when he did that with the other airliner. The Korean one was done a long time ago. There was some other airliner
Polish.
That was shot down.
The Polish.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that one. We won't even get into that one.
Yeah.
But, you know, his attitude about that kind of thing is, it's just collateral damage. So it looks to me very much, from where I'm looking at the situation, looking at all the different things that have been going on, that this sets the Russian mercenaries here up as the fall guys.
Mm-hmm.
They look like the bad guys. Oh, they must have been drunk when they fired that off and they didn't know what they were doing and they were accidentally shot a passenger liner at 30,000 feet instead of a military transporter at about 15,000 feet. I don't know. I see a big difference between the two. Maybe somebody else doesn't. So to me, this seems to fit into his narrative, but I think he miscalculated, just like he miscalculated about the kind of support he has in eastern Ukraine. I think he honestly thought that he would have the same kind of, you know, rah-rah Russia fans in eastern Ukraine that he had in Crimea, and he was wrong.
I was reading that he's kind of caught between a rock and a hard place because Putin's popularity at home hinges on escalating the war. So if he backed off, he would lose popularity in Russia. And so, but if he continues the war, he's losing popularity in the West.
Well, he's not losing popularity in the West. He really does. I don't think popularity in the West means much to Putin at all.
But he's got to, maybe not popularity is not the right word, but allies. For his business allies, dependence on those who are dependent on Russian oil and gas, his money, his gravy train.
Well, I think you are not dealing with a person who is entirely in his right mind. anybody who has that kind of power and is that kind of power hungry and who has that much resources at his disposal, and he does have an enormous amount of resources at his disposal, including all the billions of dollars that were stolen from Ukraine that are now being probably used to finance a lot of this war. I think he may very well react in a completely worst possible way in this situation. Because the problem is, he's been, not so much his popularity in Russia, but he's been feeding Russians a really bizarre line.
Mm-hmm.
They did some interviews on the streets of Moscow, and even young people were saying, oh yeah, Americans shot down that plane, and the plane was full of dead bodies. These people all died several days ago. In fact, there's even another story going around that the Americans took the dead bodies from the Malaysian airline that fell 2 months, 3 weeks ago, and it put him in this plane, and now this plane has collapsed. It's just fantastic when you think of the amazing parallel universe these people have created. This is Putin's doing.
Yeah, well, but you know what? The sad thing and the alarming thing to me, Lydia, is that there are Canadians and Americans that are repeating that and actually believe it.
But anybody who actually seriously starts talking about these kinds of theories is most likely to be a hired pen from the Kremlin. In other words, a troll. I mean, I think ordinary people may be confused. I have no question about that, that they're confused about the whole thing. And when they hear about nationalists and separatists and stuff like that, a lot of them get very annoyed. I had a friend in England say to me, oh, I'm tired of hearing all this hysterical stuff about terrorists, you know, why can't you guys just stop fighting and have a beer and forget about it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like, you just realize how little people really know and understand what was going on. Mm-hmm. It isn't about nationalism.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that is the Putin narrative, that this is a nationalist thing between Russians and Ukrainians. It isn't. It never was. Because if Russians were treated in Russian speakers and ethnic Russians were treated in Ukraine the way Ukrainians are treated in Russia, there'd be no Russian schools anywhere, there'd be no Russian theater, no Russian movies, no Russian books, no Russian press, no Russian nothing. And any deputy that opened his mouth and spoke in Russian in the Verkhovna Rada would be kicked out instantly.
Mm-hmm, of course.
And people don't get that. That in fact, Russians are truly Russian, and the Russian language has always had a very, very high status in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hangover from Soviet times when speaking Russian was supposed to be cool. And if you moved to the city from the country, you immediately tried to switch to Russian so nobody would think you were a country bumpkin because you spoke Ukrainian.
Mm-hmm.
But it's
mm-hmm.
all this stuff that people just don't know about the realities on the ground. And I think that what's driving Putin has nothing to do with Russian people, has nothing to do with protecting Russian people. It has to do with two things. His own ambitions of power, and power, to my mind, is a very, very addictive, dangerous thing, and we see that over and over again with world leaders. And resources. He took Crimea to get the resources in the Black Sea.
Mm-hmm.
And that, the thing that astounded me about that was how Europe absolutely didn't get that they had just shot themselves in the foot by letting that happen, because he took away a potentially other source of natural gas besides Gazprom.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, they allowed him to increase Gazprom's monopoly over resources in the region. And why Slovyansk was important? Two reasons. First of all, it had a very large arsenal of weapons. But secondly, it's one the beginning of a very large shale gas field that runs from Slovyansk all the way to Kharkiv. And you're not going to tell me that that isn't part of the calculation. It just happens that these are also in territories where there's large Russian populations, large ethnic Russian populations, not all of whom have any sympathy for Russia at all right now. I mean, I have friends in Kyiv that are ethnic Russian. Both parents are Russian. They grew up in a Russian-speaking home, but they were born in Ukrainian. And they said, we live here. We consider ourselves citizens of Ukraine, and we can't stand what's going on in Russia. We just can't believe the people in Russia are buying into all of this. And there's a lot of Russian speakers in Ukraine who will say the same thing. So it's not a thing of nationalism at all. It's a thing of trying to make a power grab on your neighbor because you can get away with it. And so far he has been, but this crash has been a game changer for sure. There's a lot of world leaders have become much more direct and assertive about the fact that they hold Putin responsible for this. You can see it in the popular press in all kinds of countries, from Scandinavia over to America and Canada, Britain, etc., Italy, Spain, Portugal.
And Australia.
Yeah.
Australia came out with a very strong, Tony Abbott came out with a very strong statement, and Katerina Yushchenko actually just posted on Facebook. She was just astounded that Putin's response was outrage rather than sympathy for the Australians who died.
Absolutely. No, I posted that last night, actually.
You posted that too?
Yeah,
okay.
I mean, because the Australians lost a few people as well, because there were a lot of people who were flying to an AIDS conference. They lost a couple of very important researchers to AIDS who may also have had some AIDS paraphernalia with them. And some people are concerned that they may have lost some important research stuff there. Now, I'm not sure that they would have been traveling with that, but that's hard to know. That would have to be resolved. But anyway, so some of these people were actually going to Australia for an AIDS conference that were killed on this flight.
Right.
There were quite a few, actually, very well-known people in the AIDS community, in the AIDS research community, not the AIDS community, but the AIDS research community.
And we started out talking about the mood of Ukrainians. I've noticed that there's an awful lot of sympathy. Ukrainian people are going to the Dutch embassy, and tons of flowers, expressions of grief. They still want to be part of Europe, even though we've got Merkel still playing footsie with Putin, the Dutch still playing footsie with Putin, the French, the warships are still, that's not been off, called off yet.
Merkel has to be given a bit of credit here, because Merkel actually did, one of the first things she said the day this happened was that France cannot give Putin those mistrals. She said that very clearly. And I think that's a very important statement on her part, because that really supports the worldwide movement to get France to stop this sale. There are many other countries that could buy these boats. It's just a matter of looking for different clients. It's only two boats. It's a normal price for that kind of range of defense equipment. And one of the things I suggested a long time ago was, why doesn't the international community get together and sponsor one of those boats for Ukraine? You know, we need to have some serious defense as well now, with Russia controlling much of the Black Sea, and Ukraine doesn't have any, because it used to have a naval base in Sevastopol, in a different harbor from the Russian one. It's lost the whole thing. I think everybody was kind of hoping that the elephant that they all could see was just going to kind of disappear, and the elephant did disappear. It's turned into a nine-headed hydra.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing that I found very interesting was, before this incursion started, before the Maidan started, most Ukrainians did not want NATO. The majority were against joining NATO, the whole idea of it. And now that has completely reversed.
Well, the thing about NATO that's very difficult for us to understand in the West is, people in the Soviet Union were raised to believe that NATO is the enemy. Even though Russia was supposedly, or the Soviet Union was supposedly, an ally of NATO countries, they were raised with a very definite idea that NATO is awful, NATO is bad, it's the devil, it's evil, et cetera, et cetera. And the funny thing is, they had this story one time. They said, you know, when we were asking people in Eastern Ukraine, what do you think of NATO? It was like, oh, no, 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 evil, evil, you know? And then when they said, well, what about the Pivnichno-Atlantichny Alliance, meaning the North Atlantic Alliance? Oh, well, why not? Because people don't really know what NATO is. It's just a boogeyman.
Interesting.
You know, if they had a different name, or if they said OTAN like it is in French, they probably would say, oh, yeah, why not? Because the point is, they're not specifically against allying with Western countries. They are specifically against NATO, which was driven into their brains as an evil thing all through Soviet times. So anybody over the age of 35 in any post-Soviet country remembers being told that NATO is evil, and so it affects their opinions on that. And that's been changing partly because of demographic changes, and also because what's happened now. Ukraine can see perfectly well how absolutely helpless it is when Russia starts doing its thing.
Yeah. You had said that this whole thing is a game changer. Not that war is a game, but what do you see that's different now, that strikes you, that this whole thing has changed?
Well, in a sense, a game changer has been the fact that so many world leaders now are very clearly making the statement that they consider Putin guilty. They no longer are buying the smoke screens. They're no longer pretending that it's an elephant. They're seeing that this is a nine-headed hydra, and they're saying, we got to do something. What they're prepared to do remains a question, but they're very clear about who they consider to be responsible for this. Even if they don't think he's the one that ordered somebody to fire on the airplane, because that's something that might be impossible to ever prove, it's very clear that he provided the weapons, and it's very clear that he has been supporting the people that are obviously behind it, or the people controlling the territory from which this missile was launched. Because according to satellite imagery, it was definitely launched from the territory that's under the control of the terrorists right now.
The Ukrainians...
And also, he's terrified for another thing. I don't know if you're aware of it. Ukraine is actually suing to have the Donetsk People's Republic, DNR, and the Luhansk People's Republic, LNR, declared terrorist organizations.
Yes.
And if that happens, Russia will then be considered a country that's involved in state-sponsored terrorism. And that's going to be a major problem for Putin. At that point, all financial systems get shut out, everything gets shut out, and the country becomes completely isolated. At that point, he will be like Gaddafi was.
Do you think that will actually happen?
There's a very good possibility, because there's a lot of people who are extremely angry about this crash. A lot of people. 300 people is a lot of families, 11 different countries. That's a lot of impact. I just think he honestly miscalculated the response in the West. Because the thing is, when you live in a certain environment, and that environment is completely reinforced by the people around you, who may or may not even be telling you the truth, which is often what happens to a dictator, that people no longer tell them the truth because they tell them what they want to hear. You think everybody else in the world operates the same. I mean, the West makes the same mistake. We think that Russians are relatively free and they're very open, that they're able to distinguish lies from truth, et cetera, you know, or that they have certain ways of dealing with things that they don't. They definitely have a different worldview and a different set of values and a different way of perceiving everything going on around them. And they can put a spin on anything you give them to make it sound totally twisted. I've heard it done over and over and over again.
Yeah.
So he assumes because his world runs the way it does that the rest of the world probably runs the same way. And so when you think that way, he would have assumed that other countries would have said, well, you know, so what, like they blew up a plane, you know, so a few people died, let's move on, you know, we're not gonna, you know, let's have the funeral, send them a few flowers, say you're sorry, and let's move on.
Let's hope that that this will work, that those two organizations will be declared terrorist organizations, and I think that'll be a face saver for everybody, but they'll still be able to put the pressure on him and hopefully end this horrible war and let Ukraine get back to building its nation.
That would be very, very nice.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining us, for giving us an update, Lydia, and stay safe over there in Ukraine, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you very much, too, Paula, and thanks to your audience.
Lydia Walensky, correspondent in Yaremcha, Ukraine. And you're listening to Nash Holos Ukrainian Roots Radio on AM 1320 CHMB Vancouver.